Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 198 of Geek Town Radio. We're back this week with Gray. How are you doing?
Hello. I am a little bit croaky, but I am here. Yes. Just about surviving.
Good. So apart from getting over illness, what else have you been up to?
Well, I'm very much watching things in the past at the moment, so I'm a bit slow in catching up with things. But and since I last chatted to you, I've finally got a chance to finish Titans.
Yes.
Really did enjoy that. That last episode, wow, that confused me so much. I think I spent about 20 minutes like, have I missed an episode in the middle? Where am I? And so I really enjoyed that. I really am looking forward to the second season. That has been confirmed, hasn't it, Dave?
Yes, they are. Yeah. I don't know whether they've officially come out and said we are making a second season, but they are making a second season. So, you know.
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, with that ending as well. So.
Yeah, because they've been announcing casting for it. So, because they're introducing like Superboy in the next season. So,
too right. Yeah.
And I mean, I'd say I liked Titans. I just felt that final episode felt a bit mid-season endy to me, not kind of season endy to me. But maybe that's just me. But
and has a UK channel picked up Doom Patrol yet?
No, not yet. I would expect Netflix to pick it up, but nobody seems to have picked it up yet. So we're still waiting to hear. Same with the Stargirl series, which they've started releasing photos for. So I was hoping that Netflix would be all over the Doom Patrol stuff. And we still haven't had anybody pick up the Young Justice animated series. There's a Harlequin series. There's a Swamp Thing series coming as well. So yes, there's lots of stuff, but
we wait patiently. I also finished Afterlife with Ricky Gervais. Very dark, very poignant. I finished that in 2 days. That was a proper binge watch for me there.
Yeah.
Also finished Baptiste.
Right.
It was a good series up to series 5, but series 6 I felt was a bit of a ending, a bit frustrating.
Right.
It'd probably get renewed though, because you know it's got good audiences.
Yeah.
I also binged Bounty Hunters because Sky made it available all in one. So that's
cool.
Whitehall and Rosie Perez. I like that. 5 episodes, nice manageable chunks, funny. We've got some good cast in there. Really, really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
I dug around on Netflix a little bit on my journeys home, and I found a really interesting documentary. It's called Dating Around. Like, I know that everyone will watch things like The Undateables and First Dates and Celeb First Dates, but this is sort of Netflix's take on it. And it was quite interesting. And it's the concept that they meet the person and then they go on 5 dates. And then she only invites one of them for a second date. And there's very little like talking to the camera. It's quite artistic and ethereal. And the person who's on the date obviously wears the same outfit on every date.
Okay.
But it all seems to take place as if they're intercut. And it was fascinating because, I mean, in one episode, I think it's episode 2, there was this horrendous man. I mean, an absolutely horrendous man who basically ripped this girl who was on a date and was really toxic masculinity at his worst. And I sort of then went online and there was a lot of following, but I think mainly from America. But we've got it over here. So if you like those dating apps, but you want a little bit more of an artistic and a different flair, you don't have an annoying voiceover all the way through, then go and watch it on Netflix.
That's Yeah. Yeah, that's quite interesting as a take on it. I mean, I don't watch any of those dating shows, but I'm glad Netflix are kind of doing a different version of it if they're going to go into that, which is good. That's good.
Yeah, and then I finally finished, and I'm just saying it because I cannot get enough of the performance of Patricia Arquette is the escape from Dannemora. Like, her performance in the final three or four episodes was just amazing. She was just outstanding.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get there. And I know that we've had a conversation before. And I think when I last chatted, I was like three episodes in and it just stalled on my like viewer. But then I just gave it a go, a couple of train journeys, and I was hooked. And it was a really, really good series in the end. And it was nominated for quite a few awards. So yeah.
I think it's one of those shows that I have to be in the right frame of mind for, because I tried watching it and I sort of enjoyed it. And it was kind of high quality, you know, decent HBO style drama, and I for some reason it just didn't connect with me at the time, so I've still got it on my Skybox, and I will probably go back to it at some point.
The things I'm currently watching, so the things that are the ones I'm tuning into at the moment, Fleabag. Someone give Phoebe Waller-Bridge like lots of awards. Like, her writing,
they are doing
the writing in this season. There was a moment at the end of, I think it was episode three, that was just like the best bit of writing I think I've seen in ages. I'm not going to spoil it for people who might be waiting to binge watch it. There's a moment where she's on the bench with the priest, played by Andrew Scott, and it was just one of the best pieces of television I think I've ever experienced. And even my colleague at work was talking about it the next morning.
Oh,
and
interesting.
Just like, I'm trained in media teaching, and so the concept of the way she is delivering this script and delivering this performance, to me, just continues to break down the boundaries of what we know to be television and expectations. And I'm getting a bit geeky on it now, but
Fleabag's one that I didn't watch when it was out the first time, and it's around and available, season one now, so I'm gonna go and catch up on that, because I loved Killing Eve as well. And I mean, talking about giving her lots of awards, they've bent rather heftily the BAFTA rules to allow Killing Eve to get nominated for awards, which technically, if they'd stuck to the letter of the rule, shouldn't have been nominated for.
Oh, wow.
So because it's an American produced show, even though it's very British in what it is, it's produced by BBC America, which is technically an American company. So they've kind of had to bend the rules somewhat to allow it to be entered into a number of the BAFTA categories that it wouldn't have been allowed to get into. So yes, they are bending over backwards to give Phoebe Waller-Bridge awards at the moment.
But I mean, if you look, I mean, even when you love Killing Eve, and I love Killing Eve, but what she does in Fleabag is, it's a very different genre.
Yeah.
But it's just, she understands the concepts and the sort of conventions of what she's trying to create. And the way she uses them, I just think, is really refreshing. And if they're saying that, you know, everyone's going over to all of the streaming, but you know, she's creating good content for BBC, and this is exactly what we need, so that's really good. I'm also watching Home on Channel 4, which is the story of a Syrian refugee who ends up in a family's car
on
the way back from a summer holiday. And it's actually quite a nice, again, it's not a punchline comedy. It's a comedy with heart, but it's also got a bit of drama in, because they're looking at the refugee crisis from a very, very different perspective. And so I think it's a really well-written, nicely acted drama. It's based in Dorking, which is weirdly quite near to me. But he just, in his first episode, he's like, oh, I'm in London. And they're like, no, you're in Dorking. He's like, oh. So it's quite these little bits of humor, but has a serious take on the refugee crisis as well.
Okay.
And then two nights ago, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, I started Line of Duty. I turned off all my devices. I locked the doors. I was ready to watch Line of Duty live, and it did not disappoint. A brilliant first episode. some great twists. People out there playing Line of Duty bingo with some of the classics from the previous series. There are a few phrases and lines, and Adrian Dunbar, who plays one of the detectives, he's got such a striking accent and striking sort of key lines, and everyone's already over social media are saying his lines. And I think it's going to be a good season. Jed Mercurio, he's got a lot to live up to. He's putting out The Bodyguard recently, and the previous episodes just getting better and better and better. He's got to make sure this season does it.
That's another show that I need to go and catch up on, because I've seen absolutely none of Line of Duty. I love Bodyguard a lot, and I sort of feel like I should go back and start Line of Duty, because I think a lot of that's on Netflix, the previous seasons. So
all of them are, yes, they are.
So I can go and watch them on there.
And so then on to films, still not being a great film review. I haven't seen many, but from my sick bed today, I watched Isn't It Romantic with Rebel Wilson, and I really liked it. Again, it's in my film geekery. It plays with the conventions of what a romantic comedy is, but it's very aware of itself, and I think that's what it aimed to be. But it's a nice, simple, I can watch it, I can laugh, I can appreciate. It's got quite a good cast in it as well. Adam Devine's in it. You know him from, he's been in Modern Family before. It's also got Liam Hemsworth.
Liam's the sort of, you've got Chris, who's the expensive one. Then you've got Luke, who's probably the cheapest one. Liam's kind of somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I got them confused there. But yeah, Liam was in it as well. And Priyanka Chopra is in there as well.
Right, so. Okay.
Good cast. Mm. I watched Captain Marvel a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Really enjoyed it. It's not my favorite, but that's purely because it's got a lot to live up to. And I suppose a lot of the critics and some people out there are expecting every new Marvel film to bring something new and punchy and different. Like, you know, when we had Doctor Strange and the visuals, and when we had Black Panther and the diversity, and, you know, everyone wants something different. This one was a really strong film, a really good plot. It helped fill in gaps. It helped gave this person, this character, Carol Danvers, a real journey. Some really good set pieces, really good villains, a nice twist in it as well. I really enjoyed it. So I think the critics need to back off a little bit.
Yeah.
It's 21 movies in to this cinematic universe. They're still creating. And if I read the news right yesterday, they're closing in on $1 billion, which is another Marvel movie that's going to come away with $1 billion. So, you know what? Well done to them. They've done it well.
I enjoyed the film a lot. And whilst I know a lot, and what you're saying about the critics and the fact that they've kind of picked it as not adding anything new, it does actually add quite a lot new to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Just creatively, maybe it's not got, you know, anything that's new and kind of interesting and that different. But from adding plots and stuff to the overall Marvel universe, I mean, the introductions of the Skrull and that sort of thing, it does flesh out quite a lot of the MCU in itself. So whilst it might not be creatively the most interesting of the films, I thought it was a perfectly solid Marvel movie, and it's a stepping stone to sort of other things, and it introduces a new interesting character. And so I thought it was a perfectly fun, interesting, nicely done movie, and as you say, it's making a fortune for them anyway. So who cares?
Exactly. And I am really interested about going to see Shazam. Obviously my term breaks up this week, so on Friday I am going to either go on Friday evening or go at the weekend. I'm going to go see Shazam. I still have a fondness for the DC films, even though they're not my favorite, but I really like the trailer. I like the setup. I think it's going to be something different, and it's going to warm me up to April the 25th. So another superhero movie. So that's me. Sorry, I've talked loads there.
That's good. So you had lots to do.
Yeah, lots. What's you been up to?
Well, I've not really been doing movies at the moment, but a few new TV shows. Dead Pixels, which started on Channel 4, which is this described as sort of a TV comedy about gamers for gamers. So very much not your sort of thing, I don't think.
Yeah, but I saw that a little blurb and I was like, nope, I will not record that.
Yeah, it is very funny. If you've ever played any of those big MMO multiplayer online video games like World of Warcraft and that sort of stuff, it's about a group of friends who are friends within this game, and they are completely obsessed with trying to level up and finish this game pretty much to the detriment of their daily lives as well. And the girl who's the lead character in it, there is a new guy that starts in her office who sees that she's kind of playing the game on her lunch break, and he's basically comes over and goes, oh, what's that? That looks really fun. Oh, I could do this. And she sort of, as an attempt, because she fancies him, to sort of invites him to join the game, and he acts like a complete noob once he's in there, and he's really annoying, and it sort of moves on from there. But so that was sort of the opening episode, and it's just about this relationship between these different characters and them balancing their sort of gaming life with their real life. I found it very, very funny. It's on E4. I think it was originally scheduled to be on Channel 4, but it's actually running on E4 now, which is probably a more appropriate place for it. It's a nice little half-hour comedy. It's from John Brown, who is the guy that did Loaded and Fresh Meat, and he's written on Veep as well. So that sort of Loaded, Fresh Meat kind of vibe gives you some idea of the sort of humour that you're dealing with. It is quite British in the humour as well. It stars Alexa Davis as Meg, who was in The Detectorist and Harlots. Will Merrick, who's been in Poldark, and Sanjon Yelda, who was in Strike as well, and Charlotte Ritchie, who was from Call the Midwife. So those are who plays the long-suffering flatmate of Meg, who is very much not into the game and very much kind of in the real world, and he's sort of trying to be the voice of reason but not really managing it. So it's a really nice setup of people and really good fun. I've very much been enjoying the first episode of that. I'm looking forward to the rest of it. Project Blue Book. This is a new show which is airing on, it's actually, I think, a History Channel show, but it's airing on Sci-Fi over here. So it's Aidan Gillian from Game of Thrones and Michael Mullarkey, who is from Vampire Diaries, I think, played Enzo in Vampire Diaries. It's set around the US Air Force's investigations into supposed incidents of UFOs and unexplained phenomena. So it's sort of got a little bit of that kind of X-Files feel to it. It's got Neil McDonough in it as well, who you will know from things like Suits, and he played Damian Dark in Arrow and Legends as well.
Yes.
And this was a genuine thing as well. It's based around the ideas of the US Air Force investigating UFOs in the 50s and 60s. They have added a bit more of a sci-fi kind of tint to it. Very kind of X-Files. It's not up quite to the level of X-Files, certainly not after the first episode, but they are apparently based on real life cases and things that are sort of out there. So I'm enjoying it, though. It's nicely cast and interesting selection of characters. I will be watching a bit more of it. It's not quite to the level I think it needs to be, but you know, there's not that much else around at the moment, so it's kind of interesting and fun to watch. But that's going out on Sci-Fi if you want to catch that. The other thing I've been doing this week, Game of Thrones, which of course is about to come back for its final season, and in preparation for it coming back for its final season, I have started rewatching season one. I'm going to see how far I can get through before the show comes back later in the month. But it's interesting, the foreshadowing and the references that pop up, even in those first couple of episodes, that they make to things that happen much, much later on in the run. And there are little mentions of them. And now I'm going back and watching it, you can see where those kind of things were mentioned early on. And everybody looks so young. It's really funny.
Unfortunately, I am to Game of Thrones as you are to the Great British Bake Off. I have never watched any of them. And as much as people tell me to go and watch them, I just can't. It's too much of a commitment to try and start it now. Maybe one day in the future I will.
Yeah, well, now it's sort of all available on Sky and that sort of thing. You can watch right from the start. Maybe as it's coming to an end, it's probably now is quite a good time to get into it if you haven't watched it, and you can work your way through it. It's not that much of a commitment. I mean, it's what, six hour long ish 10 episode seasons, something like that. So it's not too bad compared to some shows.
Yeah.
Some other little bits of news dropped this week. MCM Comic Con in May, which is towards the end of May. I can't remember the exact date, but they announced that Sebastian Stan is going to be one of the guests there. So if you're a fan of the MCU, you get to meet the Winter Soldier. You might want to go and do that. And Netflix released a trailer for a new interactive show they're making called You Versus Wild, which basically allows you to try and kill Bear Grylls, which... Yes.
I saw this. I thought it was this Friday, but obviously not. I was looking for it on Friday, just gone. I'm interested to see what they've done. This is using like the Bantastat technology, isn't it?
Yeah. They're starting to do a few more different shows that use that Bandersnatch kind of interactive technology where you get to make simple interactions of like doing left or right. So they showed the trailer of it and it's like he's halfway up a cliff face and it's like, do you tell him to climb back down, or where, you know, it's kind of dangerous to climb down the cliff face, or do you tell him to climb up where there's potentially a mountain lion? So you kind of get him to do various things, and it's a case of, can you get Bear Grylls through this whatever it is? So and it's a series as well, so there's like him in different environments in each episode. I think this is genius bit of marketing from Netflix point of view, because whether you love or hate Bear Grylls, this is a great show for you, because you can make him do all the horrible stuff, or you can make him do the nice stuff that you think you can actually try and get him out, or you can try and put him through the worst things possible.
Imagine the hours of filming they've had to do for that. Strands.
Yeah, so it's interesting anyway, but I might have a play around with that. I've never really done the Bear Grylls survival thing, but I might have a go at that, and when that comes out, that looks kind of interesting. So that's coming to Netflix soon. So I think that's it for our stuff this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news. TV and film news this week. We start off with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. Netflix has renewed the fantasy horror The Order for a second season. This was one got quite a lot of reaction. It's sort of a bit of a kind of young adult show, as far as I can tell, in the vein of things like The Magicians and Vampire Diaries and that sort of CWE sort of area. As far as I can tell, it's set at a college where there is a secret society. It's gone down very well by the sounds of it. A lot of people that were very happy that this has been picked up for a second season. I haven't actually started it yet, but it's one on my list to go and look at. But that's The Order, and it's picked up for a second season. Burden of Truth has been renewed for a third season, and The Coroner has been renewed for a second season. Both of those air on Universal TV over here. They're Canadian dramas. I quite enjoy Burden of Truth. I watched one episode of The Coroner, but haven't really gone back to it. And 911 and The Resident have both also been renewed, both for third seasons.
Yes, I love both of those.
Yeah, I've not been watching The Resident, but I am a huge fan of 911. It's a really, really good and interesting different procedural, that one. So I've been enjoying that. But that's Sky Witness and another one for Universal. So Universal's done very, very well, really, this week. Had three of its shows renewed, which, of course, this is always the problem when you're a channel in the UK airing imports, is you never know whether the US or Canadian network's going to pick them up again.
Yeah.
So, over on All Four, the Channel 4 streaming service, they have picked up the supernatural thriller Light as a Feather with an April premiere date. So this is another, looks to be a sort of young adult drama, centres on a series of best friends, four best friends, who invite the shy girl's night out on Halloween, but they soon regret their decision when she suggests they play a seemingly innocent game of light as a feather, stiff as a board. The game goes awry when the five girls start dying off in exactly the way that was predicted, forcing the survivors to figure out why they've been targeted and what evil force is hunting them down. Described by Teen Vogue as Pretty Little Liars meets The Craft with a dash of Final Destination, apparently.
Oh. So what a lovely hybrid of those.
Yeah, so it's it's actually been nominated for a bunch of Emmys, so it could be an interesting one to go and watch. But they're dropping the entire thing from Monday the 1st of April, so by the time this goes out, it will already be on all four. You can go and binge watch your way through the 10 episode first season of that.
Interesting.
Could be one to go and check out if you like those sort of teen horrors. Then Netflix has set a May premiere date for The Society, which is a sort of modern take on Lord of the Flies. This sounded quite interesting. It stars Catherine Newton, who was in Supernatural and was going to be in the spin-off, which never happened. So it's got her in it, and it's also got Rachel Keller, who is from Legion as well. They sort of play two sisters in it. It follows a group of teenagers who are mysteriously transported to a facsimile of their wealthy New England town without any trace of their parents. Their newfound freedom is fun, but also very dangerous. As they struggle to figure out what has happened to them and how to get home, they must establish order and form alliances if they want to survive. Yeah, I mean, it's basically Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, it is Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's got quite a good cast behind it. As I say, Catherine Newton from Supernatural and Rachel Keller from Legion are the two kind of main sisters that are leading it. Some people from Under the Dome in there. So yeah, it looks like it could be quite good. Again, another young adult drama. It's arriving on Netflix in May. They haven't set an exact date for it yet, but it's arriving at some point in May, that as well. A couple more things been announced. Fear the Walking Dead season 5 is going to simulcast once again on AMC UK, so that is arriving on the 3rd of June at 2 a.m. and then a repeat at 9 p.m. if you're a Fear the Walking Dead fan and you're one of the five people that have AMC UK, you can go and watch that. And on Netflix announced Dead to Me, which is a very dark comedy starring Christina Applegate and Linda Cartellini. It's described as a dark comedy about a powerful friendship that blossoms between a tightly wound widow and a free spirit with a shocking secret. That's the sort of basic setup for it. There is a trailer up on the website if you want to go and have a look, but it does look quite interesting, that. So I quite like those sort of dark comedy things that Netflix do. So it's called Dead to Me, and that's arriving on the 3rd of May, Friday the 3rd of May, for that, if you want to go and check that out. Moving on to some bigger news, Apple last week announced a bunch of things about their new streaming service. First of all, what it's going to be called, which is Apple TV Plus, imaginatively. Apple TV up until now has basically been the box, and I think it's been an app on some of the Apple devices, but they've got like an Apple TV box, which you can plug into your TV. They've announced that they're going to expand that. So the app will not only be available on all Apple devices, including the Mac. Obviously, there's the box as well. They've also said that they're going to release it onto Roku, which is the Roku box, the Amazon Fire system as well. So it'll go on the Amazon Fire Sticks, presumably any Fire device as well. And there's going to be an app release for Samsung Smart TVs, Sony, LG and Vizio as well are also going to be getting an app. So it's not a case of you've got to rush out and buy a like £99 Apple TV box. The app is going to be available from lots of different places, so you're going to be able to use that. And this is before they're starting releasing the original content. They have got a bunch of original shows which are coming on. They're launching in autumn, I think most of those are launching. So they're going to be doing this sort of throughout the year up until autumn, and setting it up on various different devices so people can get hold of it. The original shows that they highlighted at the press conference, there are more of this of these than these seven shows that they've highlighted, but you've got Amazing Stories, which is a new version of the classic Steven Spielberg anthology series, which is sort of a bit like the Twilight Zone sort of setup of it. It's a completely different story every single time, but they're more fantasy action adventure stories, essentially. Uh-huh. It's been show run by a couple of the guys behind Once Upon a Time, that one as well. So different directors, different filmmakers, different writers, different people behind the camera each time. But I'm quite looking forward to that, because I remember the original Amazing Stories and it was a really fun show. So I'm looking forward to that returning in a new guise. There's The Morning Show, which is stars and executive produced by Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. It's a series which follows behind the scenes of one of those US morning shows. It's kind of a dramedy. Steve Carell is also in there, and Mark Duplass and Billy Crudup is also in there as well. So yeah, it looks like quite a good cast for that. That could be
I've heard good things about that already. I remember reading some stuff on Twitter, I think, about that. It's potentially going to be very good. That's a really high quality casting.
Yeah, really good setup of people. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. You've got C, which I think we've mentioned before, is a fantasy show. It's described as an epic world-building drama. It comes from Stephen Knight, who is the man behind Peaky Blinders and a bunch of other things. Jason Momoa is the star of it. It's set in a future where humans have all lost their sight, and it's sort of so far in the future that at this point, people aren't even entirely sure whether they had sight in the first place. You know, it's one of those sort of mythical things that has sort of fallen to the depths of time. This way of life is challenged when a set of twins are born with the ability to see. Momoa takes the lead as Baba Voss, who is a fearless warrior, leader, and guardian. So, it sounds kind of interesting, and I'm sort of interested to see what Stephen Knight does with this, but it's called C, and I'm quite intrigued to see that. There is Little America coming, which is Kamal Nanjiani, who you'll know from Silicon Valley, and wrote the brilliant Big Sick, which is a fantastic film if you've not seen it. It goes behind the headlines to look at the funny, romantic and heartfelt and inspiring unexpected lives of immigrants in America at a time when their stories are more relevant than ever. So it's a show that is a sort of anthology series. It's based around various different immigrants in the US, but the way he was describing it, it's not particularly purely about immigration. It's just about these sort of outsiders trying to fit in, is essentially what it sort of is. Oh. But yes, that one looks quite good. And he proved with The Big Sick that he's very, very good at writing stuff. So, and he's a fabulous actor as well. So I'm very much looking forward to that. There is a show called Helpsters, which is a new children's show from the Sesame Workshop. I think it's a lovely idea. It's presented by a Muppet named Cody, and the idea is to teach preschoolers the principles and idea behind coding and using that to solve everyday problems.
Oh, interesting approach.
Yeah, I think that's a really fascinating idea. And whilst it's not something I'm going to be watching, obviously, because I don't have children that age. I think this is a really fascinating idea. It's called Helpsters, though. And yes, I think that's a fabulous idea for the Sesame Street guys. So one to look out for. There's Little Voice, which is a half-hour dramedy from Waitress, the musical creator Sarah Bareilles and J.J. Abrahams, described as a love letter to the diverse musicality of New York, which explores the universal journey of finding your authentic voice in your early 20s. I had no idea. I mean, he's JJ, so it's probably going to be a decent quality. And Waitress the Musical has been very popular. So
yeah, I saw it a few weeks ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, very good, very good. That's an interesting combination, Bareilles and Abraham. It's going to be interesting to see what they come up with.
Yes, so that's called Little Voice, and that's coming on. And then there's a couple of things coming from Oprah as well. She's got a couple of documentaries. One is titled at the moment Toxic Labour, and that's dealing with sexual harassment. And the other one is a documentary series based on mental health and how depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, addiction and trauma and loss is devastating people's lives across the globe. So neither of those sound like they're going to be particularly pleasant things to watch, but I'm sure they'll be incredibly interesting. She's also doing a new version of the kind of book club thing, which she's quite well known for in the US. And they're talking about doing this as sort of live streaming things where everybody can kind of watch the live stream at the same time, and she's interviewing the author, and they're kind of, you know, it's a big kind of event thing. So I'm not entirely sure how that's going to work. They were a bit vague about that, but that sounded like an interesting idea. It's sounding like most of this stuff is going to launch in the autumn. We don't have a price for it yet. They've kind of kept that quiet, so we'll see what the price point is. But it sounds like it's also going to be launching globally, though.
I'm already dreading the amount of programs gems that come out in that in the autumn period already.
Yes, it's going to be crazy. So yes, that's and it's another thing people have to pay for, and I know there'll be complaints about that. But yeah, I mean, they've got a few other things. They've got some sci-fi shows coming up as well. Depending, I mean, it's an interesting mix and selection of things. I know a lot of people have sort of said, oh, there's not much on there for me. I mean, see, I think he's quite good from a sci-fi point of view. I think Amazing Stories will be quite good. They've got another thing coming, which is, I can't remember the name of it, but it's based on one of the big sci-fi authors. So they've got that coming as well. So there are a number of kind of interesting shows coming on the Apple box. We'll have to wait and see a bit more about that. Moving over onto E4 and Netflix as well, they've teamed up on a semi-autobiographical comedy called May and George from Mae Martin. If you don't know Mae Martin, she's a brilliantly funny comedian. She's got a part of a special on Netflix.
I've listened to her on Radio 4 before. She's had a few shows on Radio 4.
Yeah, so she's been on Radio 4. She's had not a Netflix special, but it was it was part of their kind of global stand-up series Comedians of the World, so you can find it as one of the episodes on that. She's brilliantly funny. The TV series follows recovering addict and comedian May, who is trying to control the addictive behaviors and intense romanticism that permeate every facet of her life. Life is further complicated by a new all-consuming relationship with her new girlfriend called George. It's going to star Mae Martin in a sort of version of herself. She's also co-writing it with Joe Hampson, described as a deeply personal, dark, hilarious and poignant story about the unique pressures of navigating the modern day fluid landscape of gender and sexuality. I'm really interested to see this because I think she's a really funny and interesting comedian. Joe Hampson has written on TV shows such as Skins. He's written stuff for the News Quiz and News Jack as well. He's quite a dark comic, and I think as a join up between the two of them, I think this could be really quite interesting. It's going to go out in E4 in the UK and Netflix worldwide. One to watch out for, but that's at the moment, that's got the working title of May and George, but that may change. But it's from Mae Martin. And then lastly, they've announced the cast, or more of the cast, for the Games of Thrones prequel, which is still only a pilot, although I'd be very, very surprised if HBO don't pick it up. It'll have to go badly wrong for HBO not to pick up a Game of Thrones prequel. Game of Thrones has added 5 new cast members, including John Sim, Richard McCabe, Marquinez Rodriguez, John Heffernan, and Dixie Diedricks as well. And they're all going to be heading to Westeros, which presumably is where it's set if it's Game of Thrones. The Game of Thrones prequel is not going to have any major crossover with the current show, or any crossover at all, really, other than the odd reference, I suspect.
Isn't it thousands of years? Yeah. I listened to something, but it's like thousands of years before it even existed. So
yeah, basically it's sort of it's taking the same approach that Amazon are doing with the Lord of the Rings series that they're creating. So it's set thousands of years before the events of Game of Thrones. It chronicles the world's descent from a golden age of heroes into its darkest hour, the horrifying secrets of Westeros's history and the true origins of the White Walkers, the mysteries of the East and the Starks of legend. The story is not the story we think we know. So it sounds like they're going to be monkeying around a little bit with what is the established history of Westeros and stuff. So it sounds kind of interesting. I'm quite intrigued by it. It's written by Jane Goldman, who you will know as the writer of Kingsman and Kick-Ass and X-Men First Class and other half of Jonathan Ross. And George R.R. Martin, it's created the story together, and then Goldman's been writing the screenplay. So good selection of people. In terms of the cast, John Sim, obviously, people will know from the millions and millions of dramas he's been in, Life on Mars, ex-master of the Doctor Who, Mad Dogs, and a whole load of other things. Richard McCabe will also be familiar to people that saw John Sim in Collateral, because he was also in Collateral. Played Mr. Trencombe in Poldark as well. Marcus Rodriguez, who played Daryl in the last season of Iron Fist, also popped up in Chicago Fire. He's been in the US series Manifest and Blue Blood. Bloods. John Heffernan appeared in Jonathan Strange, Mr. Norrell, Dickensian, The Lock, and again Collateral. Somebody obviously with the casting this was a very big fan of Collateral. He was in that Brexit, The Uncivil War as well, which was quite a good sort of one-off movie. He's also starring in Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat Dracula series, which they're filming at the moment. Dixie Ejiadrix was in the Patrick Melrose series and has recently completed filming on a new version of The Secret Garden as well. They rejoined the previously announced cast, which is already relatively impressive. That's Naomi Watts, Ivanhoe Jeremiah, who you will know from Humans, Josh Whitehouse from Poldark. There's obviously a Poldark fan in the casting office as well. Naomi Aki, Denise Goff, Jamie Campbell-Bauer, Sheila Atim, Georgie Henley, Alex Sharp, Tony Rigbo, and Miranda Richardson, who, you know, people of my age will remember from Blackadder, but she's been in Curfew quite recently and was in Churchill and a million other things as well. So, yeah, it's an interesting cast they've put together so far. I'm quite intrigued to see. We don't know who anybody's playing, of course, because it's Game of Thrones and they don't announce that sort of thing. We don't know much more about the pilot other than that brief little description. So I am very intrigued to see this. And this is one you can watch right from the very beginning when it comes out.
I could do, possibly, yeah.
We know that David Benioff and D.B. Weiss have no involvement with it. Those are the guys that are producing the main Game of Thrones show. So it's an entirely different team of people behind the camera. But it is still coming from George R.R. Martin. It is still HBO. It is still going to have those high level production values. They're not going to want to screw this up and mess up the brand in any way, shape or form. It is only a pilot at the moment, as I mentioned at the start. So technically it's possible it won't go to series, but I find that really, really unlikely unless HBO for some reason absolutely hate it, which I don't really see happening. So I would suspect this will arrive. There has been talk of them doing other prequels as well, but this is the first spin-off prequel that they're making. So we'll have to wait and see. And if it does land, I mean, we might have a new Game of Thrones either next year or the year after. So
you never know.
Yes, we'll wait and see. So that's all the news for this week. Let's move on to the interview.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The interview this week is with Trevor Gates. He was the supervising sound editor for the Jordan Peele horror thriller film Us, starring Elizabeth Moss and Lupita Nyong'o. He's also been working on Atlanta with Donald Glover, that series, and also worked on The Haunting of Hill House and a bunch of other shows as well. So we mainly kind of stick to talking about Us and Atlanta and a little bit about Haunting of Hill House. We touch on some of his other work as well, but a really interesting guy to talk to and just talk about developing the sound for those different projects. So this is Trevor Gates. We will see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. It's lovely to have you come on and chat for a bit.
Sure.
We've spoken to a few supervising sound editor people before, but just in case people haven't heard any of the other ones we've done, do you want to just explain what your job is?
Yeah. I mean, really, you know, we're just one piece of the puzzle of storytelling, from a sound perspective. And it's my job to create a sonic, a soundscape for an audience. And I'm responsible for everything that you hear besides music. Right. So sound effects and ambiences, the production audio that's recorded on set, all the little details of, you know, people walking and gunfights and, cars and sword stabs and all, all the goodies that you hear, we have to either build, record, or clean up from what was existing. And we have to sculpt this story for the audience from a sound perspective.
Okay, cool. And how did you get into it?
I've been a music guy. You know, I started playing piano when I was 8, and I started writing music when I was 16. And I purchased my first studio recording setup when I was 20, and I was producing all the while I was working retail. And I had this dream of, you know, moving to LA and, you know, following the dream. It was a little late. When I was 27, I moved to LA and I went back to school. The job that I had, the retail job that I had for 10 years, the company went out of business. And I said, well, these are the parting seas. It's time. It's time to move to LA and follow the dream. And so I went back to school and I studied all aspects of sound, live sound and post-production and music, studio recording, acoustic design. And I worked for a music producer for a couple years after I graduated. And it was an amazing experience. But I was feeling a little held back from what kind of where the industry is. I wanted to make a living. And somebody called me as soon as I felt that feeling of like, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? I got a call and, you know, from an advisor at the school that I was. And they said, hey, Trevor, I know you're doing your thing, but I have this other thing. And I said, well, let's do it. And so that was the beginning of my sound for film career. And it turns out that it makes me really happy. It allows me to be, you know, just as creative building these sonic soundscapes for films just as much as it did making music. And so here we are, you know, 100 plus film later. It feels really great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a crazy amount of stuff on your IMDb page. But I mean, the ones that you've done recently that people will definitely have heard of are things like Atlanta, the Brave, Haunting of Hill House, Get Out, obviously. You're doing the new film Us, which I think has just been released, hasn't it?
So last night people are losing their minds.
yeah. So I haven't managed to see that yet. And just released last night, so I haven't managed to get to see that yet. I did watch Get Out quite recently, actually, and what a phenomenal film that is.
It's really an interesting film.
Yeah.
Is.
Did you have any inkling how big it was going to be when you were making it?
I did. It was interesting, and you know, it was quite an experience for me because I met Jordan. You know, this was kind of early in the process of getting. You know, they had like what they call an assembly cut. It was like the first version of the movie, and he said, "Hey, I am showing this film tonight to some friends and close colleagues, and I want you to, you know, come watch it and tell me what you think. I'm not going to tell you anything about it." So I went and watched the movie, and you know, I walked out after we had some, you know, some discussions about the film, and I called who I was working for at the time, and I said, "This is going to be a thing. This is an amazing film. I'm speechless." And I mean, it did what I thought it did. And you know, when we were finishing Get Out, the sound mix, I had some conversations with Jordan, and I think he knew he had something special, and we all knew it was something special. You know, maybe we didn't know it was going to do exactly what it did, but I think it lived up to its full potential. So it definitely, you have the feeling inside, you know, it was very cool. It was very cool.
Yeah, no, it's a phenomenally good movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm not a big horror guy. I don't do sort of horror very much.
Yeah,
but I like the fact that it's much more of a psychological thing with that, and I thought it was just phenomenal. I mean, when it comes to approaching sound for a film like that, I mean, there's some really interesting bits in there because you've got particularly the stuff with like the teacup that sort of leads into the sunken place.
Right.
Where did that kind of come from, and how did you deal with that?
It's really interesting that when you dive into a film and there are many different things that you build and they come from different places. The teacup specifically in Get Out, actually they recorded on set. It was a piece of production audio that they recorded on set, and the film editor had cut it into the film. And when it got to me, I was like, this is amazing. I'm not going to you know, reinvent this wheel, because this wheel is amazing. It sounds great. And so we just finessed the timing a little bit, and that was that. And then the Sunken Place was a creation in itself. You know, I asked Jordan, I said, what do you want the Sunken Place to sound like? And he said, do you know what it sounds like when you're in a bathtub and you put your head underwater? What does that sound like? What does that feel like to be isolated and claustrophobic and borderline suffocating? And so that's how we approached, you know, the idea of the Sunken Place. So
I really like that. Like you say, the claustrophobicness of it, yeah. It's great. It's really good. As you said, you've just done Us recently as well, which right. is his new film. And right. The basic sort of plot of it is he's gone from terrorizing one guy to terrorizing an entire family.
The entire family, right.
They basically greeted by a family of doppelgangers who are sort of the evil kind of versions of them, I guess. That's sort of the basic premise, I guess.
Right.
It's not really a sequel to the first film. It's sort of a next step in the same kind of genre for Jordan Peele. Are there similarities with Get Out from the sound side of things?
Yeah, that's a good question. Us is a very unique film, and I'm excited for you to see it. I won't give up any nitty-gritty details so that you experience it in its, but what's really interesting about Jordan is that he has something to say. He had something to say with Get Out, and he has something to say with Us. And what's really cool about Us is it makes you, you know, you walk away from this film wanting to talk about it. You walk away wanting to think about it more. And it deals a lot with duality and humanity through the horror. And so what we wanted to do from a sound perspective is we wanted to support, you know, that idea that Jordan had from a naturalistic standpoint. And so there are different parts of Us that we heightened reality, but through natural sound. And it's quite an experience. And it's a little bit different. The soundscape in Us is much more complex than the soundscape in Get Out. They're both very articulate in a way, but the composition of them are very different films. What we tried to do, and this is very similar in Get Out, but more overtly in Us, we tried to instill or evoke a feeling of dread without tipping the hat, you know, without, to make you feel uneasy, but maybe you just don't know why you feel uneasy. And we did that with subtle shifts of ambiences and natural sounds of carnival rides. And that's all the details that I'll give you, because I don't want to spoil anything, because it's a great experience to walk into Jordan Peele's movies with, you know, with very little understanding of what they are.
I managed to avoid a lot of the stuff for Get Out for a very long time. And I think that was the best way to approach it. I didn't know what the film was about.
It's an amazing way to experience it, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, great. So I had no idea what I was going to watch. And really, you know, and I think that's definitely the best way to experience it.
Agreed.
Really, really, really good film. Along with the two Jordan Peele movies, you've done a number of other horror-related projects as well. I mean, Haunting of Hill House is one that I mentioned. Were you a particular fan of horror, or did you just find that you had a talent for making, like, you know, horror soundscapes, or was it just you got one and then you got another and then it just sort of? I mean, you've done other things as well, but horror seems to be a sort of quite a dominant genre.
I'm a horror fan, like, you know, the next person, but there are other fans that are more of a horror fan than I am. You know, I'm not going to pretend to be, you know, the uber horror fan. But what I did find myself in a place where I had a talent to tell these stories, and people recognize that, and they've been trusting in me to help tell their stories, and I love it. There's texture and meter, and there's life in what I do for these horror soundscapes. And so I've probably fell into a place, and it's been a really good relationship. It's, you know, we're happy with each other.
That's good. That's good. Always good place to be. I mean, on the other end of that, you've got things like Atlanta, which is much more of a comedy. How is it getting involved in a show like that, that is out of that sort of horror genre, and also working with somebody like Donald Glover, who is obviously very musical himself and knows sound. Right. How's that sort of dynamic?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I started a year and a half ago. I signed up with this great new company called Formosa Group, and they paired me with the Atlanta people. I've brought Jordan Peele as a client along with me and Mike Flanagan, but put me in a room with the filmmakers of Atlanta. And we really saw eye to eye. You know, we sat down and we talked about some things, and we knew it was going to be love at first sight because we understood each other. And I feel like that really translated well into the season of Atlanta. You know, Hiro Murai, who's the director of Atlanta, is just a fantastic human. And I really enjoy making art with him. And Atlanta is kind of the dream job because you felt like you were in a room with a bunch of people that it felt like extreme togetherness. Everybody, you know, there wasn't like a client service relationship. It was like, this is the team. We're in this room together making something that's exceptional, you know, having a statement for the world. And I think it really brewed something special. And so I'm very thankful and grateful for that relationship with Hiro Murai and Donald Glover, because I think we're going to continue to build together. We just finished something that's called Guava Island. It's a special, and I won't say much about it, but I think the world is going to receive this, you know, special thing really well. It's a short movie, and I appreciate that togetherness and, you know, the ability to work with people on a creative, collaborative level. It really speaks to the way that the world receives these projects.
Yeah, and received them very well with Atlanta because it won you an Emmy. So
it did. Old Teddy Perkins. Yeah.
Yeah. So
which is funny enough, which is kind of a horror, is kind of a horror episode. You know?
It's funny that it's that episode that happens to win it as well. But the other project, well, there's a couple of other projects as well. Haunting of Hill House, which, whereas something like Get Out and the Jordan Peele thing isn't really a jump scare movie, Haunting of Hill House is kind of more in that kind of, you know,
a little bit, yeah,
jump scare. I mean, not completely, but a little bit more in that kind of area. Is it fun to do something which is a bit more of a straight traditional horror?
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, Mike Flanagan is also, you know, he has his own level of genius, and I appreciate the relationship we have as well. And it's continuing. We're doing a new movie called Dr. Sleep.
Oh, cool.
Right now, which is the sequel to The Shining, which is, you know, a really interesting thing.
Yeah.
But Mike Flanagan, he writes really well. And that is the bones of his art. It, you know, really stands strong with his writing. And, you know, he's not afraid to have long stretch monologues. And then that also makes for really good jump scares when you want to get loud. And Mike Flanagan does like to lead into some of those moments. Honestly, episode 8 of The Haunting of Hill House has one of the craziest jump scares I have ever experienced in my whole entire life. It is insane. And, you know, what I appreciate about Mike is that he earns those jump scares. He doesn't force something that wasn't designed to be that way. He creates them to basically give you that experience. He designs those jump scares. There are a lot of movies that, you know, try to force jump scares just by sounds at a moment where it's not earned. And I don't think that's something that Mike Flanagan does. I think he's really careful in the way that he designs these moments. So it is a lot of fun to see people jump.
It must be great if you ever go stand at the back of an auditorium where there's like a movie playing, just to see everybody move up at the same time.
Oh yeah. You know, what's really fun in the movie world, in the feature world, through the process of creating a movie, we go through a preview process where they recruit people to watch the movie to give a score, so they kind of know what the temperature is for every movie. So we get to sit in the back and watch people jump, and we get to watch them cry and laugh. And, you know, that's a really, a really fun part of the process for sure.
Yeah, that must be really great fun. When it comes to finding the sounds, are you one of these guys that always has some form of recording device on them?
For the most part, yes. I carry around most recently this cool Ambio headset that plugs right into my phone that records at 96K and, you know, right into my phone. And it records a binaural recording, which is binaural is representative of how you hear as a human. And there have been a handful of times where I've just whipped it out and recorded something. It's hard to walk around with a huge rig with, you know, high resolution microphones and whatnot. But I am equal parts a recordist and equal parts a creator. And basically, there is no substitution for capturing something unique and original. But I also enjoy manipulating existing library sounds as well. I think there's a value in repurposing and kind of in the postmodern world, you know, appropriating old sounds and, you know, building in them into something new, as well as recording something that's fresh and unheard. So yeah, it's a little bit of everything. On Us, I had the pleasure to work with two re-recording mixers that I think are legends in this business, Ron Bartlett and Doug Hemphill. These guys have created so much amazing art. Their last credit before we did Us was Blade Runner 2049. And Doug Hemphill's first sound credit was on Apocalypse Now. These are guys that, you know, sound just runs deep in their blood. And Doug has been an active sound recordist, sound effects recordist for many, many, many years. And just being around Doug and hearing his stories and the way that he talks about things and the things that he's done and the sounds that he's recorded is a huge inspiration to me. And I really appreciate that opportunity to experience masters, legends. They wouldn't like me to say legends because they're very humble guys, but I think they're also legends.
Awesome. Obviously, it'd be a bit difficult if this happens to be something from Us, but if you could pick one particular effect that you've done or, you know, soundscape that you've put together from any of your projects that you're really proud of, which one would you choose?
That's really interesting. I mean, I'm proud of the sunken place in Get Out. I think it's minimal. It's minimalistic. There's some interesting creative stuff that went into creating that minimal soundscape. In The Haunting of Hill House, we did this thing where we subtly pitched down crickets or frogs in a couple of places as the scene gets creepier, you know, just something that you would feel is happening. And then by the time you know it's happening, the stuff hits the fan. I'm proud of those moments and the inspiration of creativity. And episode 6 of The Haunting of Hill House was a really technical wonder. You know, there was all these long, 15-minute shots. And we really built this storm, this soundscape outside of the house to really breathe as a character. I'm really proud of that. I'm proud of Us. I'm not going to say too much about it. There are some pretty visceral parts of this thing, but we, like I said, we really tried to embrace the humanity and to be subtle and not subtle at the same time, you know, to push the limits, to push the envelope of what we can do sound wise, to not tip off that something's wrong, but also make you feel really weird at the same time. And one of the thing that if there's anything that you know about me, when you get to know me, you understand that I have an extreme passion for what I do. And so if I'm not proud of something that I've done, then I haven't done it right. I'm proud of Atlanta. Yeah. And I pour my soul into the work that I do, and it's my fingerprint, this is my legacy. So I think we've done some really cool things in the last couple of years, and I'm excited to see what we're going to do next.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of which, have you got anything else coming up that you want to talk about?
Well, like I said, this watch out for Mike Flanagan's next film, Dr. Sleep. It's a great, you know, ambitious, lovely story. And we've got some other stuff on the horizon that, you know, I probably shouldn't talk about.
Don't want to get you in trouble.
No.
Okay, so the last two questions. First question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Oh, man. I'm not watching TV. I'm working.
Yeah.
You know, I've been watching a lot of documentaries. Like, there's been a lot of some documentaries coming out, you know, of some the hard stuff, the, you know, the stuff that we don't want to think about, but we should. Of course, I'm rewatching the season 7 of Game of Thrones for the release. Yeah, in preparation, you know, just brewing it up for the finale. Yeah. Honestly, that's about it. I mean, it has been a grueling 6 months with us and a couple of other projects that we've kind of been doing at the same time. I've been staying away from the TV quite a bit. So maybe it's time to get back in.
Yeah, lots of things to catch up on when you get the time.
Right.
So lastly, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, what show would it be?
Oh man, that's a tough question. I'm pretty thankful for The Atlanta and The Haunting of Hill House. I feel special to be able to be, you know, part of that. I don't really have any anxiety to be a part of things that, you know, isn't meant for me. You know, it would be nice to work on Game of Thrones. I would like to do maybe an Avenger movie, you know, at some point in time. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Maybe a Pixar film, you know, add that to the resume. Those are life goals. I think that's,
that'd be good.
That's pretty good.
Good. Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on. It's been lovely to chat with you.
Likewise. Thank you.
I'm really, really looking forward to seeing us. And
yes, you should Skype me back once you see us, because you're going to want to talk about it. And, you know, we'll talk.
Will do. Awesome. Have an awesome day.
Cool. Thank you so much. I appreciate
Cheers.
It.
Bye.
Bye.
That was the interview with Us supervising sound editor Trevor Gates. You can see his work on Us, which is in cinemas now, on Atlanta, which airs on Fox over here, and I think it's on Netflix. I think you can find it on Netflix, but worth looking around. And Haunting of Hill House, which you can definitely find on Netflix. So go and check that out. Here's some highlights for next week on TV. Highlights for next week on TV. We have Barry season 2 that arrives on Sky Atlantic on the 3rd of April at 10:45, just before. Yes, again, that's another one that I need to go and watch the first season, because everybody tells me that's really good. And
really good. Surprised me. I think I went into it not expecting it like to be anything special, but I came out of it going, oh my word, it was just a really good piece.
Yeah. Just before that, because for some reason they're the wrong way around in this list, Veep returns for its 7th and final season.
Yay.
Which I'm very, very much looking forward to. It's hilarious, that show. So that's 3rd of April at 10:10 that arrives. Very, very happy that's back. I will be sad to see it go, because it's such a wonderful show. The Tick season 2 arrives on Amazon Prime. That's on the 5th of April. That was brilliant. It's wonderfully silly, and I very much enjoyed Peter Serafino watching the first season of that, so glad to have that back. Chilling Adventures of Sabrina season 2, that arrives on the 5th of April on Netflix.
Such a quick turnaround. That's amazing.
Yeah, they have had a very fast turnaround on that. I think they're referring to it as part 2, but yes, it is effectively season 2, so that's back on the 5th of April on Netflix. Marvel's Cloak and Dagger, that comes back to Amazon Prime on the 5th of April for its second season. It's fine. That show is the Marvel shows go. It's not one of my favourite ones, but it was perfectly watchable. So that returns for its second season. Our Planet, that comes onto Netflix on the 5th of April. That's the new nature documentary, which is sort of them trying to do the Blue Planet BBC documentary stuff from the creator of Planet Earth as well. And I think David Attenborough is voicing it as well. So, 5th of April for that, if you like those nature documentaries. The Durrells returns for its 4th and final season. That's on ITV on the 7th of April at 8 p.m. Lucifer, if you're following the TV broadcast of that, that's third season of that comes to Fox on the 8th of April at 9 p.m. And 911 returns for the second half of the second season to Sky Witness. That's on the 9th of April at 10 p.m, which I'm very much looking forward to coming back. And that's everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to add.
No, nothing else to add. I mean, the next time I'll be talking to you, I'll hopefully be talking about Endgame.
Yes.
Fingers crossed.
Probably will be, yeah. So, 25th of April, that is, isn't it?
Yep, that is, yes.
So, yes, I'm very much looking forward to that. I will be there on opening day for that, I think. Yeah. If they want to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
They can find me at Grey the Geek.
Which is Grey with an A.
It is Grey with an A, and that's on Twitter.
Yes, on Twitter. And for us, you can find us on the website, geektown.co.uk, throughout the week to see all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. Lots of stuff going on Instagram if you like your cosplay photos. There's lots of those going up. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.